growing up was pretty interesting and like I would say a little bit rough, I think. So I studied mechanical engineering in University of Lagos, Nigeria.
Oh, really? I studied that too.
Oh, really? I think we actually were in the same class, right? I came through like a failed, pretty much like a failed business, I would say. Like, because I literally like came out of school with so much energy. And like, I wanted to like consider like building a business or building a software product. So I just took that from there. I'm like, okay, let me try to see if there's like something I can do with this. So I pulled it out of the code base and I tried to just like improve it. And like, I got it to the point where I showed my friends again, and they were like, oh my God, this is so cool. I mean, I would love to actually use this in my project. So the funny thing, the first time I sent it over to my friend, I did a zip of all the files and I just like sent it to them. That was like my first rookie move. And then they were laughing at me because like, I mean, you don't send things through zip anymore.
Probably do not believe in your ability at that moment. You also just want to prove to yourself that, okay, I can do this. So just take the shot and start building projects no matter how late or so.
Without my faith in general, because like I'm the kind of person that I'm a bit more like self-aware when I do most of the things that I do. So like
my name is Esther Adebayo, and on my tech journey with Esther, I sit down with tech folks to talk about how they've been able to handle rejections, overcome obstacles in their careers, and really cut through the hype. From coding mistakes to battling rejections to balancing work life and even doing phenomenal things, my guests will share everything raw and real on my tech journey with Esther. New episodes drop every week, so you don't want to miss out. Hello everyone, welcome to the final episode of season one of My Tech Journey with Esther. Now, today's episode is very special because I have a very, very, very special guest with me here today. If you know, right? I have Sage Segun Adebayo here with me today. You know, he's the creator of Chakra UI, Panda CSS, ZagJS, ArcUI, and, you know, he's done so many phenomenal things in the open source field. And is also a GitHub star. And yeah, thank you, Segun, for joining me here today. Come on my podcast. So thank you for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I mean, I'm really excited to be here. Looking forward to sharing my journey. Let's get it going.
Yes, I'm ready to hear your story like I've never heard it before. So yeah, let's get started. I always ask my guests to start with something funny, and I always ask them a fun question. So for me, I'm interested in knowing where the name Sage came from. Is it a combination of your names? Like, people call you Sage, so where did the name Sage come from?
Oh yeah, it's actually a funny story because I'm a fan of anime. I watch anime a lot. So my favorite anime is Naruto. So Naruto is like, Naruto gets into this mode where he gets to like, he beats all his enemies like very fast. Like, I mean, it's one of those things where like, once you're fighting Naruto in, I mean, hypothetically speaking, when you're fighting with Naruto in the anime and you beat Naruto to a certain point, then it goes into this mode called Sage mode, where it's like, the moment he gets into that Sage mode, he literally like, you're done. He pretty much beats the hell out of you. So I saw that, I'm like, that looks really nice. Maybe I just pick out Sage from that. Maybe not the mode at least. So I just picked the name Sage from there, and it just stuck really nicely at least. And I love the name.
Nice, yeah. So you've done really, really amazing things that we'll get to shortly, but I'm interested in knowing what was growing up like, you know, how was your education like, your university, how was that period pre you entering tech like?
Growing up was pretty interesting and like, I would say a little bit rough, I think. So I studied mechanical engineering in University of Lagos, Nigeria.
Oh, really? I studied that too.
Oh, really? I think we actually were in the same class, right? Yes. Yeah, so it was, I studied mechanical engineering. I spent most of my life then just like doing school stuff, trying to get really good, getting good grades, getting 5.0 and all the things. Like, those were my goals before, like, joining tech. I think we definitely had, like, huge opportunities back at school to do, like, more competition stuff and, like, trying to actually think outside the box beyond the classroom stuff. So it was really nice to sort of see towards my second year into my third year in school. You were there as well. So I'll just say, like, we managed to get into, like, this global competition called Shell Eco Marathon. And in this competition, we had to actually, like, think outside the box, build a prototype electric vehicle without prior knowledge. I mean, if you're used to Nigerian educational system, you know that, like, they don't really teach us so much there. And we actually don't get to, like, really practice what we have been taught. So that was a challenge for us to actually, like, go buy some materials, watch some more YouTube videos, and, like, try to learn all this stuff by yourself. So it was my first, like, mini intro into tech, I would say.
Yeah, and Sage was, like, our mechanical leader at that point, you know. I was really just following along with him, and he did so many incredible things. A lot of what he did that period, I was like, how exactly do you even know it? Like, have you built a car before? But, you know, we managed to pull that project off, and it was one of the most amazing projects,
Yeah, it was awesome. It was awesome. I think I learned a lot from that project. I think one software that I learned a lot was Autodesk Inventor. That was, like, one tool where, like, I mean, the funny part is that we then end up writing, like, exams about it maybe the year after or something. So it was just like, oh, I already designed vehicles with this software. So, like, it was such a breeze.
Nice. So let's talk about Chakra UI a bit. So I know I've read your GitHub README story. I also know a bit about the journey before Chakra UI. So I would like you to just walk us through when you were working on, you know, the pre-Chakra UI. Did you know that it was going to be this big before Chakra UI blew up? I know you launched it in 2019, and when it blew up, your Twitter really blew up. Like, you just started getting lots of retweets, followers, and all of that. But before then, how was working on the project like for you? What are some of the challenges that you encountered, and how did you just keep on pushing despite, you know, you not even knowing much about the open source space that time? I know you were more or less learning and doing at the same time. So how was that like?
Yeah, that's a good question, because, like, before launching Chakra UI, it was more like, I mean, I literally had very, like, a lot of, like, thoughts behind my back. I mean, so thinking about, like, I came through, like, a failed, pretty much like a failed business, I would say, like, because I literally, like, came out of school with so much energy. And, like, I wanted to, like, consider, like, building a business or building a software product. So I called a few of my friends together, and we tried to actually build a product called Career Lift. So Career Lift was more like a resume building software that would actually help you build your resume to help you apply for jobs. So that process was a huge learning ground for me. I won't call it a waste of time, of course, but we did spend lots of sleepless nights, and, like, literally sleepless nights, to actually go through, build the thing. And I think during that time was when I learned about, like, React from my friend Biola, and even Color as well. So it's just like, just sit with them and see how they write code. I did a lot of design prior to 2019, that's 2018, 2017. And then there, just watching them, I pretty much just learned by observation and just, like, took all of the skills that they had pretty much and applied that. So immediately after that, we tried to put the business out there. The software did not make as much money as we expected, at least. But we, I mean, I just took that as a learning ground, I would say, as a learning period, and just, like, went into my own moment of, like, I need to kind of separate myself from this a little bit to figure out what I really want to do, if I want to continue there or, like, do something else, right? So I mean, it just occurred to me. So one of the things we had there was mostly, like, we built some sort of, like, mini, now it's called component library. We just called it UI kit back then. So we had a tiny UI kit in a software called Storybook. I didn't know so much about it then. I just knew it was called Storybook. So I was like, okay, this is Storybook. I mean, I still found them useful. Every day I open them, I'm like, this is something I can use to build another project if I'm not really interested in continuing with this. So, like, So, I mean, we called the career lift chakra at the time. So again, part chakra, I came from Naruto again. So I just put it out from there. And when I look, each time I look at it, I thought like, maybe this is something I could maybe pursue a bit further. I wasn't really sure, to be honest. So I just took that from there and like, okay, let me try to see if there's like something I can do with this. So I pulled it out of the code base and I tried to just like improve it. And like, I got it to the point where I showed my friends again. They were like, oh my God, this is so cool. I mean, I would love to actually use this in my project. So the funny thing, the first time I sent it over to my friend, I did a zip of all the files and I just like sent it to them. That was like my first rookie move. And then they were laughing at me because like, I mean, you don't send things through zip anymore. You have to use something like GitHub or like you have to ship it to NPM or something. So like, then I got to actually like get the information I needed. Like, okay, how do I actually ship this for other developers to use?
So you're building just locally at that point, right?
Yes, all of
them. Pushing.
It's not like GitHub stuff. So I got back to sort of like GitHub. I mean, I think I'm not sure what made me open an account, but I think I had an account from way back. So I just like, let me take it and just put it into this account and push it there, I guess. I wasn't too familiar with Git and all the processes. I just like, the only command I knew is git commit, git push. So git commit, git push. That's it. And then it goes out there. And then I just shared the repo with my friends. And then they were able to use that in their project. All right. So that was like the pre-phase to building Chakra UI. So in that process, I learned a lot about distributing the project and creating a build setup and a build pipeline, the CI environment. So that was a good learning ground. And then finally in September, when I thought I'd like worked on this over like a year and 6 months roughly, I'm like, let me just put this thing out there and see if anyone else finds it useful besides my two friends, I guess.
Wow, that's such a story. That's such an interesting story. So you said that prior to that, you were in UI designer. You didn't have any coding knowledge, and in 1 year and 6 months, you were able to just not just learn but also actually create an open source library, right? So you also mentioned that like from your friends Cola, Biola, that's where you learned. How was that learning process like? I really want us to like talk about it. Was it just learning from them, or did you have to also do some personal learning? Did you watch YouTube channels? Did you maybe read books? How was that development process to really develop the skills that I needed? How was that like?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I'm not the kind of person that reads books to learn about, like, I don't read books to learn about code, to be honest. It's not that deep yet, at least. Maybe when it gets that deep, I'll be a different person. But right now, it's like, so the learning process was a little bit like, I mean, intense and rough. I mean, I did not have like any specific like way I learned it. I think the very first person I got my lesson from was Biola. So my friend Biola pretty much like showed me a code. Like, this is one. This is how. Yeah, huge shout out to Biola. So this is one code for the button component. This is another one for the testimonial component. I mean, does it make sense to you? Just look at it. Like, is this something that looks like something you would like to try? And I'm like, I guess. I mean, let me give it a shot. So I learned about I think from way back, I knew a little bit of HTML all the way from uni. So it was, I'd forgotten most of that, to be honest. But I was like, at least it's not, some things are not foreign to me. So I just like got into that and like tried a few components. I designed a badge, designed a tag component. Like, oh, actually it looks pretty nice. And I can write CSS to style this. So it actually felt a bit like relatable, for me. And then again, of course, this was during the period when I was trying to build this, my software company. So it was like, we used to work over the night for, I think three times in a week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. So we just go like from 8 p.m. all the way to like 3 a.m. and just like work all the way and try to build something. So it was a pretty intense period because we did that consistently for about 8 months. So that was like not something you want to try at home. So it's like, do not try this at home. Yeah. That was a pretty rough period. But I think that like, I mean, as always, like just sitting there and just learning by observation and sitting with them, watching them fix issues and actually contributing as well, I mean, when you get to this point when you're trying to, you're just learning and you're sitting with people that already know stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, can I help you build this? And I say, no, don't worry. I'm good. That's just like, they know that you're still learning and you're going to slow them down. So that made me feel a little bit somehow. Sometimes when they be like, don't worry. I mean, don't worry about it.
I got this. Yeah, I got don't this. Worry.
So what I used to do is like, anytime I got back home, I just like log on to like, so I had this React training subscription and I think Frontend Masters.
Okay.
And then there's one specific person on YouTube. I can't remember the name now, but I know it was an Indian person that actually did help me understand React and the concept of props and state. And those things are like very mm-hmm. foreign concepts that are really hard to get yeah. at the beginning. So I think it just explained like, I watched a lot of videos, but just that explanation kind of clicked with me, and that just made me really get a bit better. So I go back home and I practice, and the next overnight I'm like, can I help you? Don't worry, I'll finish it in like 20 minutes. And I'll be okay, let's just give him a shot and let's see if you can try it. And like, I tried it out, and I mean, from there on I actually got pretty good by just repeated practice of the same thing for I think over 6 to 8 months. And I think that gave me the basic, it didn't make me become an expert, I have to say. It just gave me the basic foundation I needed to actually then build on top of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what you said is so useful, because from everything you've explained, I think it's just that curiosity to want to know more and to actually build projects. For someone like you, even though you were like learning from people and you also watch some tutorials online, it didn't just stop there. You actually continue building projects, you know, building stuff, no matter how little. And I think it's so important when one is learning, especially when you're learning something new, to not just keep watching. And even when people probably do not believe in your ability at that moment, you also just want to prove to yourself that, okay, I can do this. So just take the shot and start building projects, no matter how little. So yeah, I think that's one of the things I got from your story. So moving into Chakra UI, in 2019, you made a tweet, and I don't know how many retweets it got, but I know it really blew up, and you started getting like comments from people that are also in the industry, established people. I think you got a comment from Ryan Florence and so many like big people in the tech space. So how was that period like for you, like when you launched, not knowing that it was going to blow up, and it blew up so fast, and you know, you just started getting lots of followers? And how did that make you feel? How was that whole period for you at that time?
I mean, yeah, so I was just like one humble guy from nowhere that just like did something, and I'm just like, let me just put it out there and see how it felt like. So it did feel really nice to see, like, I mean, it actually meant a lot to, I mean, a whole lot more people out there. And I think I was, I mean, as much as I felt the excitement, I was also like kind of scared a little bit. Like, I didn't know like what's the next thing from here. I just put it out there, and it's yeah. like, it was the first time I ever got like, I mean, a lot of people following me like in one single week. So it just felt like, I mean, I'd never.
Do you remember how many people?
Can't remember, but I think at least the first day was maybe at least 200 or 300 people following you like at that same instant. And it was quite a lot. I think over the week it was maybe like 1K or 2K or so in general. So like it really made me feel a little bit like, oh boy, what's going on here? Yeah, because I had never felt that before. So it was a new feeling for me, I'd say. But I think like a part of me just knew that like, I mean, something was going on here, and I may just end up working on this thing for a longer period than I thought, because in my mind, like, this is like the finish line, like, I'm done, I just want to put it out there. But then, after speaking to my friends again, they're like, oh, now it's open source, that you're just getting started. Like, it's pretty much just the beginning, even though you thought it was the end. So congrats.
You're just getting started.
Yeah. So that was a quick check for me, and I just like, okay, I need to figure out like what to do to actually like be able to like maintain this for a much longer term. And as always, the next day when you open, after you launch something, the next day when people try to like play with it, they start to open issues. And then I didn't know so much about like what these issues meant. Like, are you just telling me that there's a problem and that's it? Or like, how are we going to fix this problem if you tell me there's a problem? Yeah, so And then again, of course, I started looking into it. I think I just got naturally curious to see how I could solve the problem through a reporting instead of just leaving it there. So I was just like, okay, let me at least comment and join the conversation. And I think like the repetition comes again. So like people open issues, you try to get curious, you try to fix the problem. For each of those cycles that you go through, you learn something new. So a lot of the time you even learn something completely different from what you expect. So someone says like, I tried to install this project in a TypeScript Next.js SSR setup. And then I'm like, what's this?
What
like,
the heck is that? I just launched it. Like, what are you telling me?
I just launched this, and I was just used to create React app, and mostly JavaScript, not much of TypeScript. So when people started to report these kind of things, then you start to say, okay, no, it shows a server side error. There's a server side mismatch. I'm like, I'm not sure. Like, did I really make the right decision launching this? But I think that like just the courage to not doubt yourself during that time is also important. But I have to say that I kind of did like felt a little bit like inadequate, and you get a little tinge of imposter syndrome there because like people are asking you questions you know nothing about.
You do not even understand the question too.
Don't even understand the question. Yeah. So, and then they go ahead to maybe even create a detailed reproduction of the issue, and then I was like, I don't even know where to look to actually solve this problem, right? Even though you told me there's a problem. So then you have to go acquire some knowledge, come back to the issue, and then now you can understand what's going on. But then the more you do that over and over again, Chakra, you have probably done that for over 3,000 or 4,000 issues today. Wow. And like for each of those, you can consider them like tiny bits of knowledge that you're learning. So you'd learn a lot more from an open source project than your classic job, because open source is a wide, diverse ecosystem of people using your tools in different ways. So I think that pretty much helped me grow like really fast.
Wow, that's so inspiring. You talked about courage to just believe in yourself and not doubt yourself and to keep learning, because this tech journey, there are a lot of times that people will throw different things that you probably do not even know, but it's important. Even me, myself, on my job, there are many times that I probably am struggling with lots of things, whether it's code related, and these things might be seemingly small or things that people just expect you to know, but you do not know them. And in that moment, it's easy for you to just feel like, okay, no, maybe this is not for me, but you just have to keep pushing yourself forward and keep learning. I think that is the most important thing. Just keep learning. There's no amount of things that you feel like, okay, I know everything. You just have to keep learning. Yeah. So let's talk a bit about open source. I know that I also was involved in Chakra UI. I'm still involved in Chakra UI. In fact, that's where I had my first developer relations experience, right? But how has open source been for you, particularly working with different people that you do not know? You know, how have you been able to manage that whole, the project itself, but much more working with people in open source?
I mean, I think the topic of like open source and people is a very deep one for me, because it's like it's one of those things where I'll just start from just like working with strangers first of all. Like if you're not the kind of person that likes to talk to strangers, someone you never met, and jump on a call with them and just hey, how are you doing, what's going on, like, I mean, if you're not comfortable having conversations with people that like you don't know before, it might be a bit of like a foreign experience, and you might not really enjoy that process, or you'd be exhausted by that process. So I mean, for me, I mean, from back then, to be honest, I didn't have so many people that like, all the people that I knew are people that I already knew for a long time. So it's just like, okay, I think it's time to even meet new people in the first place. So like open source was that avenue where it's just like, you get to meet people. And again, everyone you meet knows something that you don't know. So it's like, it's always a good opportunity to actually learn from other people. And of course, there's a thing where when you launch something and maybe it gets like a lot of attention on Twitter, or like people start to know about it, you might be tempted to just think of yourself like you're now a genius or you have arrived pretty much. But to be honest, if you really look within, you know that like there's a lot of things you don't know. And the only way to work around that is just to like open yourself up to people.
We've all been taught that resumes and cover letters are the keys to landing a job, but I'm here to tell you that there's a far more powerful tool that hiring managers are actually paying attention to. Ready to hear it? It's called your portfolio site. That's right. While everyone else is tweaking fonts on their resume, your developer portfolio is how you can wow recruiters. It shows off your creativity and skills in a way that no boring resume could ever. But building a polished portfolio from scratch takes forever, right? Wrong. I've created the ultimate portfolio site template that does all the heavy lifting for you, built with Next.js pages and Chakra UI. This portfolio site immediately introduces you to potential employers, highlighting your career achievements, gives them quick links to contact you, and check out all your socials and GitHub. All you need to do is make tweaks and deploy, and then you're good to go. Access the code for this portfolio site by visiting the freelancehq.com/getmyportfolio. Yeah.
And let them help you fill those gaps. Right. So I got, after launching Chakra UI, I got pretty stretched pretty much. And what the stretching meant was you have to look at the issues, you have to fix the issues, you have to think about the project in general and try to see how can I move the project forward in a way that makes more, that delivers more value to people out there. But then you are constantly stuck between fixing issue and moving the project forward. And then to add to that, then you've got to keep everyone interested in the project by tweeting about it, by creating a community, a Discord community or a Slack community. I mean, sharing tips, like just getting everyone to talk and interact and sort of get some engagement around your product. So that was like a little bit too much. And of course, you then add to that, you have to do good standard class documentation of all the different things you have in your project and your product. So that was just too much. I mean, for one person, I only started out with I wanted just a project. I just made a standard project and storybook, and that's all I wanted. But it wasn't enough to keep a thriving community. So then you have to open yourself up for help. So I literally just look out for people that have been consistently contributing and reach out to them. Hey, would you love to actually work a bit more closely with me and to help shape the project? So I just grabbed every consistent human being I have around me within the project. And then we formed some sort of core collaborator or team. Yeah. And then everyone just contributes their bit from time to time. And I think that's sort of the first part of working with people. And then I think there's also the other part where it's kind of pushing the project forward, because the community is stuck with what you have currently made. But in your mind, you have a vision for what the next thing you want to make. So it's sort of how do you go forward and at the same time make the people that are currently there happy? It was a bit of a struggle, to be honest. And I don't have a perfect answer for that one. I just feel there are times when I work on current stuff and there are times when I just go fully focused on future stuff and try to bring that to the present. That's kind of how I balance it all.
It's interesting because a lot of times when you're maybe launching a project open source, you're just looking at least from the point of view of the main maintainer, right? You're just looking at it from, okay, I have this project and I want to launch it, but no one really educates you on the entire process, working with people, issue maintenance, creating a community, the continuous maintenance. No one really educates you. There's no school to teach you all that. So you're literally just trying things, testing things. If it works, you pick it up. If it doesn't work, you definitely make mistakes along the way. So it's interesting to know that after I launched Chakra UI, you didn't just stop at that. Now you've launched Zag.js, you've launched Panda CSS, and very recently, you're one of those that launched ArcUI. So I'm interested in knowing what really goes on in your head. Is there another open source project that is coming soon? Open source project coming soon? When you were launching Chakra UI, obviously, I know that you didn't know that you were going to launch 2-3 open source project, but what goes on in your head? Is there something, is there a new open source project that we're expecting?
Oh no, I think I've I've given up all the given all the open source energy that I have right now. I've given my best, at least as far as the ideas that I currently have. Maybe when the idea stream comes again at some time, maybe there may be something. But right now, like, as far as like me thinking about the problem space of like front end developer tooling when it comes to design systems and component libraries, I'm sort of like giving all the different bits that I can, at least based off of the idea. So I think the journey from build launching all these different things is pretty much from the fact that like I'm not the things that I make. The things that I make is just like a snapshot of my current knowledge in time. So it's like when people actually like take a library and evaluate a library, they're just looking at, oh, like this library has this feature and this other one has that feature. We're going to go with that other library. But I think like underneath all of these conversations that happen are people that actually made these libraries. Then the people that made these libraries have their own current snapshot of knowledge at that point in time. So the success of the library is then dependent on like how much those people that are underneath the library actually evolve quickly. Yeah. All right. So a lot of the time is pretty much like all these projects is mostly like a side effect of like me learning and constantly evolving very quickly. And I couldn't find a way to make everything all into Chakra UI, but I thought that like just like the snake, you have to shed the old skin so that the new one can show up. It's like you have to pretty much actually just like shed the old knowledge so that the new knowledge can actually like shine and express itself standalone on its own. So that's how I end up sort of like working on all these different projects.
Nice. And how is your time like for you to have been constantly working on projects like this? How do you manage your time? Do you have like 36 hours in a day? Like how exactly do you manage your time to still put out so much, you know, good work?
No, I don't. I mean, I wish I had like a good, answer as to like how I manage my time. But I think that like, I try to pick out. So a lot of the time, one thing that we don't talk about in open source is how you maintain yourself, how you make money. Because like you just do all this stuff that I talked about for free. Or I say like in good faith, right? So like you sit down, you make the thing, you make the community, you form the team, and then, I think like every maintainer or every creator reaches the point of like, I call it, I mean, I think I read some in a book by Seth Godin, it's called The Deep. I mean, so everything goes all nice, it's going all up, and then it reaches that point where it's sort of yes. like, deep. It's not that the library is going down, but like it's also called like diminishing intent or diminishing passion, where it's like you start off with so much high energy, then get to the point where like, Your excitement is not so much there anymore. But people are still talking about it. All the things happening on the outside and stuff. But within you, you can already sense that like it's not something that you used to enjoy as much as like when you started off. So a lot of the time, it's just a reality check for you. It's like, is this really what you want to continue doing, or do you want to like figure out like how to make it work for you so you can continue on? So the sustainability part of open source then becomes a topic. All right. So after a few months doing that over and over again, I thought, okay, I mean, I'm not making any money doing this. In fact, I'm actually making people richer by doing this, like, because people use your libraries. When it gets really popular, people use it in their jobs. Right. So you can imagine like someone is literally earning a salary with the thing that I made. and I on the other hand, I'm not like earning a salary, not to even talk of a bonus of like, or even a fraction percentage of what people are making with this tool that you made. So, and in fact, it goes so, sometimes it can get really bad the more you think about it, because like people then go ahead to make courses about your library. And then like they make money off that. Of course, that's value. You cannot accuse anyone for saying, hey, you made a course, or hey, you're using my library at work. It's just like people pay for perceived value. So in some sense, they use the library, but it's not exactly like tangible value because they're building on top of that. But someone that made a course, someone that's like has a day job, like that's value for them and they're making money from that. So as a creator, then you have to think about like the value of your time at some point. Like what else can I make to actually make this sustainable? For me, right? So, at the time, I used to like either work in companies that allow me maintain Chakra UI part time, which actually gives me a bit more safety net. And then the other thing I did after a while was actually to build another product on top of Chakra UI, which is Chakra UI Pro, which actually then provided also another source of income. So I did have like a job, and then JobTrackUI Pro that like gave me the buffer and still gives me the buffer that I need today. So a lot of the patterns of my life has literally been just like around that. Sometimes I drop the day job to just focus fully. And then when I see that maybe the account is getting to red again, I just like pick up a new job and just like move on from there. But then even at this stage of my life, I'm really thinking to drop, so like let go of that cycle of like pick up a job, get a job, pick up a job, and really just like believe in the thing that I've made and actually try to actually like drive with success even further.
That makes a lot of sense. Speaking of like money and just maintaining yourself, how was your first job like? How was your first job like in terms of tech? Did you have to send a job application? Was it just an invite? Or like walk me through you getting your first job and how the experience was like for you?
Yeah, I mean, I had two phases of my life where I was in tech. There's a design phase, and then there's like the development phase. So like I can talk about like getting the first job in each of them.
Yeah.
In the design phase, early 2017-ish, I used to sort of like design for the church I attended back in university, LVCU. So I just like, it was just something that was kind of like natural for me. I learned how to use Photoshop. Again, that's also a very interesting story. Just learned how to use Photoshop, and I started designing business cards, banners, and stuff like that. So my very first like paying job was actually like, did come from like a friend of mine called Gideon at the time. So we had like an interesting project to help design like a website for like a radio platform. So that was like the real paying job. Like that's besides like all the petty job by like 500 naira type of job. Like the real paying job that paid us pretty well was actually that one. And there I actually got a little bit familiar with like websites, even though I contributed to design for the most part. And then from there on, I ended up like making a lot of money from like freelance platforms like Upwork and Fiverr and stuff like that. So that was like a walk in the park from there. And then my first official tech job, I think, was came immediately after the launch of JobTrackUI. So that was sort of like a testament that somehow the work that you do can make a way for you. If you actually just like put it out there, that's it. And you don't want to doubt yourself for too long. Like just take it and put it out there and keep putting stuff out there. You never know which one is going to actually like click with people. Right. So
yeah.
I was lucky enough that the second thing I built was like, I mean, something that worked to people. So I got three different opportunities from launching JobTrackUI in September. So directly in October, November, I was pretty much just evaluating different opportunities. So I just got different offers from one, a company, Frontity, and I had the opportunity to sort of travel to Berlin to join Contentful. And then, of course, I think I also had an opportunity in Dubai to join another company as well. So I was pretty much in that process of like evaluating. So I ended up sort of going for Frontity, the first company, I think, that reached out to me via email. So I worked there, built like different templates for them, and actually worked pretty nicely. That was like my first gig. And that was where I actually learned that there's actually a lot of money in tech if you're good. I used to actually work remotely freelance on platforms. Mm-hmm. I made the same amount of money, but it's like I would have to work a bit longer to make the same money in every month. So it's like, seeing that there's a tech job that you can have that actually like gives you like a good amount of money to earn a decent living, that was like a pretty good thing. And then from there, of course, it was just like, as they say, the rest is history. And I had many jobs after that. Yeah.
Nice. That's interesting. So you do not really have to send an application out. It was really your work that spoke for you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the best jobs I've had, are usually the ones where, like, I never had to send an application because, I think, like, the resume is, I think we used to think about resume as, like, a paper where it's, like, you create a PDF document of, like, all your educational background and all your history and all the things, but it's, like, I think the resume is just, like, a proof of your talent. It's just, like, that's how I see it in my mind. So it doesn't have to be the paper. I think these days people are even too distracted to read a whole paper.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, you can create your resume with your Twitter profile today. Like you can go to your Twitter profile and make it look like a resume, pretty much. Like, this is my profile picture. This is my job title. This is my description and my quick description of my career. And then like put a sticky post in there that sort of like gives people like a quick overview about you. And make sure that your posts actually, all the stuff you post actually constantly aligns with your, with your own hopes for like the jobs you're trying to get. So it's kind of like, you just have to kind of like be a bit more intentional there, with your with your social profiles, because we notice that people spend a lot of time on social media. So it's like, that's the best chance you have. I think when you reach the point where you have to send a resume, it just means that like you haven't tried the other means, which is like actually getting people's attention via social media.
Yeah, that's such a good advice. So your Twitter or social media profiles can actually be a resume for you if you use it intentionally. That's so good. Yeah, so let's talk a bit about how your faith has impacted your journey. Yeah, you gave the like the verse about someone, like if you're diligent, you know, your gifts can make a way for you. So how has your faith impacted your journey, you know, everything that you've done so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think in every way possible, to be honest. Like, I mean, I don't think today I don't think I'll have a career today without like, I mean, without my faith in general, because like I kind of person that I'm a bit more like self-aware when I do most of the things that I do. So like, I think like one of the instant ones is sort of like the very first time I got like this Twitter, I mean, this Twitter break where people tweet about the stuff you have done and stuff. Like, as much as I felt excited, I was a little bit also like reserved. I was like just making sure that like, again, all this like success and fame and all these things like not get to your heart. But it's kind of like just, you need to sort of like just stay centered in yourself and in God, and just like not let those things, because as always, like when you get the praises of people and you do anything wrong by any means at any point in time, it's sort of like a reverse effect happens, pretty much. Like a plane that travels and lifts off the ground up to the sky, if there's any single mistake, the crash is always very, very huge.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the closer the plane is to the ground, the better it is, even if it wants to crash. But it's like, the higher it goes, it's sort of like, the more like the potential of the huge crash. The more fatality be. And this is where your faith actually helps you actually still hang on, to make sure like you don't have that fatal fall, in any case where you make a mistake, or you actually keep yourself grounded, that even though you have this thing that is successful, it doesn't define you. You have your own identity outside of that. And my own identity has sort of like been grounded in my faith in general. It's like the work I make does not define me. I mean, I'm just me, myself, and I'm happy with myself as I am. I just say as me as I am, I'm okay. So it's pretty much like just making sure that like you don't stay distracted. You're not distracted by like the popularity or the fame. You're pretty much just like taking all the thoughts and ideas that God has given you and just like putting it out there at different points in time. It's just like, because of that, opportunities will come. But I think shifting your focus from that to like, man will give me opportunity, or I start to chase these other people to help me, like, I mean, talk about the things that I make, then it starts to feel like, I mean, you're using your own human effort instead of relying on like pretty much your faith in God to help you. Of course, God will then guide you to different people at different points in time. But it's like, you're not, it depends on where is your heart is. Are you thinking that people will make you successful, or are you sort of centered on the fact that like you're following the leading of God, and then as a result of that, you're putting things out there.
Yeah, that's so good. All right. So my final question is, do you have any advice or tips for anyone that is either launching tech career or is either launching an open source project? What advice would you give any of this, you know, categories of people?
Yeah, I think there's two different sets of people, to be honest. Someone that's trying to get a job and someone that's trying to do open source. I'll start with the open source person. I think for the open source person, that you have this idea, you want to make it open source, you have to kind of like, I mean, I have to be a bit practical here. There's the fluffy one and there's the real one. I just want to go to the real one directly. Okay. You have to look at your bank account. and make sure that you have like enough like financial buffer for yourself, or at least maybe you're working in a job and then you open source is your part-time or something. Because I think technically speaking, sustainability in open source is something that would hit you maybe one or 2 years into the project. It's just like when you're a teenager and when you're an adult. I think those are two. Those are like at the point where you want to launch the open source project, your mind is like a teenager's mind or even a baby's mind. You're so excited. Everything's all bubbly and nice. You have this adrenaline going on because people are talking about it. But then the older you get in that process, then it hits you really hard. You have bills to pay. But then you have to figure out how to make it sustainable. So for the open source project, just make sure you have like some sort of safety net for yourself, so that you have the energy to keep going, right? And you don't want to do that when your bank account is red. You want to do it like way ahead of time. So just keep your bank account sort of like always there and prepped up. And of course, always seek out sponsorships from people that use your library. They may be impressed enough to give you, but if you don't ask, you never know what is out there.
Sure.
But I think the most important bit for both people is like always put your work out there. I think that's it. Even if you have a project that's open source on GitHub that nobody knows about, no one is going to use it besides your friends or people that you work with. So if you want the world to use it, you have to let the world know about it, because the world by default is distracted by all the nice stuff going on. All right, so you have to strive for, you have to like fight for attention in some way. Like you have to let them know that, hey, I just made this library, come check it out.
Yeah.
So you have to, and not just once, not just twice, you have to do that as a repeated cycle.
Continuously, yeah.
Over time. But I think that a lot of people, I mean, you might face the fear of like, public opinion. Like, what will I put if I put it out there and there's one random person comes out and just like bites the hell out of you, like on social media? But I think that, again, just being grounded in the fact that like your work is bound to change, your work is bound to evolve. Like, the current state of your work is not the final state of your work. So it's like, even if someone comes and gives you like a harsh feedback, you want to take it as, okay, that's a feedback that I can use to improve my work the next time. It's not an attack against me, it's just an attack against the current state of the work, and I can keep evolving that as I go. And of course, a lot of these fears are valid. I'm not the one to say like, hey, just ignore the fears and go ahead and do them. In fact, when someone comments on you on the work that you're putting out in a way that is not good, it should kind of fuel you a bit to like figure out what you're going to do next to improve. And you don't want to be reactionary when things like that happen, right? So a lot of times just you have to face that fear and know that it's okay to put your work out there despite the fear, even when it shows up. And a lot of time it never happens. It's just a picture in your head thinking people are going to come after you if you put something out there that's not correct. But even when it happens, you have to be mentally prepared for that. It's like, it's not an attack against you. And it's not a personal thing. It's not personal, it's just business. That's how it feels like. It's just like,
yeah,
just talking about
it's not about you.
That kind of thing. So that's how I see that. I think a lot of the main advice I'd give to kind of move your career forward is just to not be afraid to put your work out there, right? And again, even when you put your work out there, managing your expectation is something like, you're not putting it out there to like impress the world. You're just putting it out there for the world to know like the progress you're making as a person. And that's all. Whether one person likes it or three people like it or only your family members like it, that's okay. That's a good start. The more you keep doing, the more people start to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And the more people see it, someone out there might be like impressed enough to give you a job. Someone out there might be impressed enough to maybe consider interviewing you, even if they don't give you a job. And that's like how your opportunities kind of grow and expand.
Wow, I love the practicality of that advice. It's so practical and useful for people. So I've really, really enjoyed this episode. It's been very insightful. I've learned a lot from you, and you know, a couple of things I probably did not even know about, you've shared it. So thank you so much, Sage, for coming to this podcast. It's been a pleasure having you.
And yeah, thank you for having me.
Come.
I hope.
Thank you, Sage. It's been amazing. I've enjoyed our conversation. And yeah, thank you everyone for joining us on, you know, this last episode of season one of My Tech Journey with Esther. If you haven't watched any of the previous episodes, please go back, you know, feel free to watch any of the episodes that we've released so far. And I hope you've also enjoyed the season so far. If you have any comments, feedback, questions, feel free to drop them in the comments or send me an email. I would really love to hear from every one of you. So as always, thank you, and I hope to see you in another episode, in another season. Enjoy the rest of your day. Bye.